Welcome to Peach State Prospects, your go-to podcast for all things Atlanta Braves minor league system. I am your host, Gaurav, and today we have an incredibly exciting episode lined up for all of you. We're going to continue to explore the future stars of Atlanta by diving deep once again into the MLB draft. A special welcome back to Joe Carson as he and Garrett Spain will be joining me today. Garrett, Joe, how are the two of you doing?
I am doing great. It's going to be a great episode. I'm really looking forward to it. Joe, I'm really glad to have you back on. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. This is an episode that I've been looking forward to for a while now, ever since we got the confirmation that Carlos is going to join us. So, really excited for this.
Joining us today is a very special guest, Carlos Collazo from Baseball America. As most of you that are listening, you probably already know, Carlos is an absolute authority when it comes to high school, collegiate, and minor league baseball. Together, the four of us will be breaking down the Braves' potential draft picks, discussing their potential, and what they bring to the table for the future of the Braves organization this episode. So sit back, relax, and get ready for a look at the next potential star in Atlanta on Peach State Prospects. Let's go ahead and get things started. Carlos, we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's busy times this time of year, but always happy to talk draft and excited to be on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
I can only imagine how chaotic it is over there at the Baseball America headquarters. Again, special thank you for taking time out during this crazy season. The way today's episode will work is we'll kind of have a bunch of different questions that the three of us will talk about. We'll go at three at a time. So I'll go ahead and kick things off. Carlos, how would you rate the overall strength of this year's draft class?
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a down draft, especially coming on the heels of a 2023 class that was just so impressive. I think this year's group is potentially the worst draft that I've covered at BA. That's going back to 2017, 2018 would have been the first 2 years for me. It just has a very weak high school class that is really one of the weakest high school classes in a long time. I talked to a lot of scouts just asking like how far back do you have to go to get a high school class that's worse than this one? And I've had multiple scouts tell me that this is the worst high school class they've ever covered. And because of that, there are a lot of profiles that get pushed up on the college side that just are not typical first round profiles. I think the top 10 is strong. Beyond that, though, I think it's probably a below average draft class.
We are definitely going to get onto that a little later in this episode. As you guys know, the Braves pick later in the draft. They select on the number 24th overall. So it's going to be a very interesting couple of questions for you. You talk about the weakness of the prep side of things, but overall, are there any positions in particular that are, somewhat deep, or is this kind of a barren draft overall?
Yeah, I think the strength of the class is the college hitting demographic, both at the top and throughout the first round. I think it's going to be very college hitter heavy. Again, part of that is just because, like, some of these, the lack of high school players has just allowed for more college hitters. But really, I think it's the only demographic that you could say is like a solid average or maybe above average group if you really like it compared to just a normal draft and an average draft class. Every other demographic, I think, has pretty significant questions. If you look at college pitching, there are a lot of players that just don't have control command profiles that typically fit in the first round, or you have players that just didn't perform up to expectations this spring. With the high school hitters, you don't have a Max Clark or a Walker Jenkins kind of at the very top. You don't have the same like up the middle profiles that you typically have. You don't have the depth of like second tier high school hitters. And then for high school pitchers, there have been some northern pitchers who've climbed the boards later in the process, but there's no Noble Meyer, there's no Jackson Jobe kind of headlining the top. So it's just a very unusual draft class. But there are a lot of college hitters. Kind of keep in mind the offensive context of college baseball when you're looking at some of these numbers, and don't like run away with all the performance numbers that these players have turned in, because it is probably the most overheated offensive environment we've seen in multiple decades now in college baseball. But I do think there are some intriguing college hitting bats, even if there are fewer like up the middle profiles as we'd typically want to see.
It's really interesting that you bring up control command and college pitchers in particular. This year I watched probably more college baseball than I ever have, and that's likely due to Drew Burris being on campus over in Atlanta. And I saw, those kinds of issues, but I didn't realize it was, a collegiate, world, wow, collegiate wide versus a ACC, SEC type of deal. thank you for that. You know, moving on, we talked about this last week and how the draft combine was just a couple of weeks ago, and it's something new that Major League Baseball's implemented. For the most part, you know, these showcases and the combine itself will really help fuel late risers in the draft. Who are some of those players that really made a name for themselves, you know, particularly late in the draft process?
Yeah, there are a couple guys that stand out. Maybe the most prominent is New Jersey High School shortstop Luke Dickerson. We recently updated our BA 500 board earlier this week, and he was probably the biggest riser. He's kind of in that Jackson Merrill, Sammy Stafura, Mid-Atlantic, Northeastern high school prep rising tier. Actually, in a mock draft this week, we had him going in the first round. So he's just had a really strong spring. He's a great athlete. He's also a hockey player, won a state championship with his high school on the ice. And then I got to see him at the combine. So he kind of fits all these categories of a player you want to see at the combine. One of these late helium or pop-up type guys. I mean, we had him on our 500, but he was quite a bit further down in previous updates. But he's very strong. He stays through the ball well. He's got a chance for solid hit, solid power. He's a plus runner, maybe not a shortstop in the long run, but he does a lot of things well. He's probably the most prominent. But in terms of like consistent ascenders, I would say Christian Moore is a guy I would name that maybe is like definitely going to go in the first round. We started him around like the second round range on our preseason list, but he has just steadily continued to perform. It's 3 years of solid performance at Tennessee. He cut the strikeout rate significantly this spring. And then he also just went off through the NCAA tournament and the College World Series to the point where I think there's like a non-zero chance that he goes inside the top 10 picks, which if you asked me that on February 1st, I would have kind of chuckled. But he's been just a consistent like rising name up the board. So those are a couple. I can do more if you want, but I think those are two pretty prominent ones to give you.
You guys at Baseball America do an amazing job of draft coverage, but as a whole, your minor league coverage is on another level even beyond that. What are some perceived strengths with the Braves farm system? Some of the weaknesses, and do you think these will influence the way the Braves draft this year?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for the kind words. The prospect team we have over here, they do a great job. I'm kind of like partially a part of it. I mean, I'm mostly focused on the draft, but they'll definitely be glad to hear that. I think in terms of Braves farm system strengths right now, it is hard to like point to like a current prospect demographic that is a strength. I think in general, the Braves have shown a great ability to develop players. I know historically, like Braves pitching pipeline is something that people talk through. I think they still do a really good job of maximizing their pitchers and just turning out a lot of pitchers who are not often the most like highly touted prospects from like the draft. So that is an area of strength for them. They also have a pretty solid track record of developing hitters, as you guys well know. I mean, last year's offense, a lot of that team was homegrown. They seem to really also target and do a nice job with players that have two-way backgrounds, which is kind of just an odd little quirk. I don't know if that's just because it's happened a few times I start to associate it with Atlanta, or if that's a specific background and profile that they like. Maybe they think that like taking two-way players like a Michael Harris, who you really get them focused on one thing, there's just a lot of upside potential. But in terms of where the farm is at right now, it is pretty weak in terms of depth. I mean, they've had a couple prominent pitchers this spring, or not this spring, but this season, and AJ Smith-Shawver and Hurston Waldrip, who I think have really exciting pure stuff, but they've struggled with injuries, they've struggled with performance, and really for several years now. I kind of do the Braves prospect system for our handbook. They haven't had any hitters that really look like impact type bats, so I'm hopeful that they start to address that either in the draft or with some of the international prospects that Ben Badler has them linked to, and both right now and kind of in future years. So hopefully with them getting back in the mix on the international market, you'll see some returns in that area moving forward.
The Braves have been connected to a lot of college players in the draft. That's a pretty common thing through multiple years now. But there's always a possibility that they're going to go under slot prep arm, kind of like they did with Owen Murphy a couple of years ago. One name that's really stood out is Braylon Doughty. Are there any kind of whispers and rumblings on the draft strategy for the Braves overall this year?
I've not heard really much in terms of like specific draft strategy for the Braves. They're kind of in a range where it's really difficult to get a clear picture of that if there is one, beyond like them just wanting to take the best player available. They're in a range where I do think both like the high school pitching demographic and the college hitting demographic, there are going to be a lot of options for them. for whatever reason, we've had them tied to Ryan Waldschmidt pretty consistently over the last few weeks. And for like mocking out teams in the 20s, sometimes it's easy just to like go with a player that you've heard linked to them. And the fact that it keeps coming up has just made it easy for me to keep putting Waldschmidt there with the Braves. I think I mentioned this in the mock. Like, I don't want that kind of repetitive player team pairing to like, like, I'm not trying to like tell you that this is definitely their guy. It's more a case of like, I know that he's been linked to the Braves. It does sound like they really like him. He does fit in that range on talent. And so it just kind of makes sense. But to your point, the Braves are one of the few teams I would say in the industry that just don't hesitate to take a high school pitcher in the first round. They're a trio of guys who can make sense in that range. Cash Mayfield, a left-handed pitcher out of Oklahoma. William Schmidt, who is the top-ranked player on our board out of Louisiana. It sounds like his action really starts around the 20s, maybe right in front of the Braves with the Dodgers. And then Ryan Sloan is also a guy that I would mention. He had a phenomenal finish to his season. He's a right-handed pitcher out of Illinois. He's got three pitches that all are above average or better, might be all plus or better. So if the Braves do want to just keep taking these arms, I think there are going to be a lot of options for them in this range where they're picking.
You mentioning Ryan Waldschmidt is perfect. We wanted to ask about him. We've read all your mock drafts, and he's been connected to the Braves. You've connected him to the Braves a lot. Sounds like he has great TrackMan data. What can, if the Braves were to take him, what could Waldschmidt bring to the system, especially a system that, like you said, doesn't really have a lot of impact hitting talent?
Yeah, I think it would be just like first and foremost, a hitting profile that you can kind of look towards the team in the future and say, okay, there's finally like a guy that might turn into a regular kind of after you got through the wave, whatever the wave that Michael Harris kind of capped off. Since then, there's not been like a regular homegrown player that there's a lot of confidence that will slot in and kind of be a regular moving forward. So maybe he could just fill that role. I don't know if there's like a long-term option for the Braves in left field at the moment. I do think he's probably going to be a corner outfielder. He does run, he can steal bases, but I think probably will be maybe a solid left fielder. But the calling card with Waldschmidt is just the well-rounded and analytically proven offensive profile. He makes a lot of contact. He hits the ball hard. He has pretty strong swing decisions. He had a really impressive year with Kentucky in the SEC against the best competition in college baseball. There is a little bit of a mix in terms of opinions on Waldschmidt between analysts and more old school kind of traditional scouts. I know there are some athleticism questions with Waldschmidt that I've talked to a few scouts with, but then I'll also talk to analysts and decision makers, scouting directors who just look at his overall profile and think that there is a lot of comfort with the safety that people think of with Waldschmidt's offensive profile, like getting a college hitter with his sort of traits and skills and what he's shown this spring. I think it's going to go in the first round at a certain point. And when you start to stack him up with some of the other players that are going to be around and available here, I think a lot of decision makers are going to have comfort with his overall offensive profile. So there are going to be players that are picked around him that maybe have better pure athleticism or better pure natural tools, but a lot of those guys also maybe have more swing and miss questions or don't hit the ball quite as hard. So it's kind of like a safe-ish college profile. It's not one that I would like classically associate with the Braves, but they have taken some of those profiles in the past. And if they do want to go to the college ranks, that could make some sense for them.
One of the other names that the Braves have been connected to recently is one of the more intriguing prospects, just from a curiosity standpoint, is Gerangelo Sanja. Sorry, that name is extremely hard to pronounce.
I think you did a good job with it.
So what about him makes him so special? I know he is right now a switch pitcher. Do you think that's something that he could actually continue to do effectively as a starter at the professional level?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think there's a case to be made that Gerangelo is maybe the most talented ambidextrous pitcher ever. He's a guy who can get to 94 miles per hour from both arms. And they're just very, there have been a lot of like kind of gimmicky switch pitchers over the last few years, some high school players who can throw from both sides. But typically, it's not the sort of power from both sides. I do think he is going to be, first and foremost, a right-handed pitcher. He focused a lot more on the righty side this season with Mississippi State and took huge steps forward. To the point now where I think he's probably considered the consensus number four college arm after the clear 1A, 1B of Chase Burns and Hagen Smith, and then like the clear number three of Trey Savage at East Carolina. So he does fit in this kind of 15 to 25 range. I heard last week that it sounds like the Braves could be a bit of a floor for him. So if that's true, maybe that's the guy they're really hoping falls to them in all the mocks I've had so far. I've had him going off before, just because if you want college pitching in this class, once those first three are off the board, there are really not a lot of options. But Cincha, he can get his fastball up to 99 from the right side. It's a real slider that could be an above average pitch. And in terms of like the ambidextrous nature of his profile, he really has great feel for the slider from the left side and in specific left on left matchups. I think it's a legitimate option for him. Although the power is more like not low 90s, touching 94, the slider is not quite as hard from the left side. But I do think that like there is some real utility for switch pitching for him, even if I would assume like most of his matchups and overwhelming majority will probably be right-hander. But I'm fascinated to see like how teams will use that, because I think it could be a really cool weapon that is just not super common.
Yeah, I have a couple Braves-centric questions here. One is something that gets thrown a lot around with the Braves prospects and system is the word makeup. And I know that a lot of teams focus on makeup, but it seems like also the Braves have a lot of those high character guys from the extensions that they've given out to the homegrown talent. There's something that Anthopoulos always mentions is that they have faith in the person that they're giving this contract to. So do you think that the Braves put a higher emphasis on the makeup more than other systems do?
It sounds like they do. I think there are a lot of teams that really do prioritize makeup. It sounds like I would put them near the top in terms of like it actually being important. There are some teams in the past few years that have like almost like abandoned makeup in their evaluations in the draft, and that's really hurt them. And I think those teams like figured that out quickly and tried to replicate that. So makeup is exceptionally hard to quantify and kind of put a number on. But I think most every scout that I've ever talked to in the industry, all the decision makers know how valuable it is, because just so much of projecting prospects is unknown. There's so many uncertainties. And if you can just feel good about the personality and the work ethic of the player themselves, whether that's like just to avoid getting in trouble, or whether that's handling the failure of baseball, or whether that's just the capacity to understand all the data that's being thrown at players these days, like I think you can have a bunch of different personality types and still have strong makeup. So it is something that's super important. I would love to be like kind of in the room with some of these teams when they're evaluating that and how they talk through it, because it's also probably the single piece of these player evaluations that we at Baseball America are furthest away from. Like you'll hear about it when you talk to scouts about players, but in terms of like getting in the weeds and getting inside the room for those player interviews and those player questionnaires, like how it is actually valued from team to team, I think would be fascinating. But I think there's no one in this kind of space who's evaluating prospects and players who would say that like makeup is not important at this stage. It's just a matter of like everything, like how do you value it and how do you contextualize it?
And then the last question I have for you for the Braves side, it's something that we've kind of discussed that we're not as familiar with, but it seems like there's been a focus on this from the Braves system and maybe from other systems too. But recently the Braves have drafted quite a few pitchers early on in their drafts that, for example, Spencer Strider, Spencer Schwellenbach, Owen Murphy, Hurston Waldrop, that are 6'1" and below, so not your prototypical taller body pitchers, but they have elite extension. Do you think there's an advantage to this, such as the vertical approach angle that you think maybe Braves are specifically targeting, or other teams that are model driven are also targeting?
Yeah, it's a great question. I didn't really associate Hurston Waldrop with that other group of players just because his slot is so north-south, and he doesn't, I don't think he has the best vertical approach angle in the world, but all those other guys, that makes a lot of sense. I know specifically a team that has also done really well with identifying and developing college pitchers, specifically like later round college pitchers, is the Mariners, and they really prioritize VAA, it seems like. So this is a vertical approach angle. Extension certainly does help with that. I mean, the further you can release the ball down the mound, typically the lower your release point is going to be. And if you have a low release point, it's typically like a more easier to get to like a flatter plane. And the Braves seem to really like these carrying fastballs that play up in the zone, and pairing that with like a power breaking ball. So I think a lot of analysts really love that. The kind of meta fastball, the ideal shape of that pitch comes with a player that has a very flat or very shallow vertical approach angle. It's interesting though, because as I say this, the Mariners have also been a team that have targeted sinkers and two-seam fastballs, where a lot of the industry is really, and maybe this is already changing. I think there is some indications that this is already changing, but those like kind of riding four-seam fastballs, most other teams really prioritize. So that the difference there with Seattle is interesting. I haven't specifically like thought of the Braves as just hunting VAA, but I do think it's like a good observation, a good point, and it might be something that I just kind of need to look into more with some of their other pitching prospects.
I really love this new ascension of VAA, especially within the industry. Like one of my favorite prospects right now is Hayden Harris. And it's just fun to watch someone that is, you know, I think he's 6'1", throw 90 to 91 and just absolutely blow away hitters. Just the last appearance I saw from him, some of those hitters at bat, they look like they were swinging at 97, 98, just completely devastated. That ball went straight through him. So it's a fascinating, it's just absolutely fascinating. Yeah, exactly. I think we have time for a couple more questions. So Carlos, we've noticed over the last few years that a lot of these top level minor league pitching coaches are leaving for college jobs. Do you feel that the money in college baseball and the amount that they can throw at assistants compared to the minor leagues has in any way shrunk the gap in development quality between major D1 schools and professional organizations that, you know, might affect whether a high school player should attend a college or not?
Yeah, I think absolutely that's the case. I mean, I think now there are some pitching programs in college that are ahead of a few major league teams. I mean, those teams are probably pretty obvious now, but some of those teams are playing catch up compared to like the guys at Wake Forest with their pitching lab. I know Arkansas did a really great job. Obviously, there are some pretty prominent major league pitching coaches who have gone to college baseball. I mean, the guy who just helped develop Paul Skeens, who now is maybe the best pitcher in college baseball or in baseball, like clearly up there. I think it's two things. It's like these major league teams love to not spend money. And now there are college programs specifically in the SEC that are just throwing a ton of money towards baseball. And so if you want the best people, handing out the biggest salaries is how you get those. So if teams want to acquire the best talent, it's not some automatic gimme now that all these people just want to work for a big league team because it's a big league team. I think there's also an element of like autonomy of a program. If you're a pitching coach at a college baseball team, you have a lot more direction. Like you can kind of, I mean, you're not part of an organization's philosophy on pitching. If you have very strong opinions on what needs to be done, or if you want to get in the mix on recruiting, there's kind of a lot more ownership, I would imagine, specifically with some of these pitching coordinators or pitching coaches who are working at the minor league level for big league teams who are not kind of directing everything. You're just a bigger fish in a smaller pond. And for some people that might be a really appealing environment to be in. I think also with a lot of these college teams, there's just a lot more continuity and stability depending on the coaching staff that you're with. I mean, if you're with a big league team, there's a lot of turnover with pitching coaches, depending on like how the big league team is doing, what your general manager is doing, how long the contract is there. So I think there are a lot of different elements, but certainly in the last few years, just with the data we have, with some of the technology, I think the gap has certainly gotten smaller in terms of like how pitchers are being trained. I still think the biggest difference, though, from a player perspective is when you're in affiliated ball, the goal and the priority is your development. And when you are pitching in college, the priority is winning baseball games. So that is definitely a key difference that can affect how much you're pitching and just workloads in general. So I still think that like for players, like being an affiliated ball, the ultimate goal for those teams is to make you the best pitcher you can be. And that's certainly a difference still.
What a fascinating trend. That's a fantastic response, Carlos. Thank you for that. Well, who knows if it's right,
but it's what I got for you.
Well, since we have a little more time, I'd love to ask you, you know, a non-draft related question. And that's, what was your favorite moment this past college baseball season?
Yeah, that's a good one. I got to see Chase Burns pitch live. I think the second week of the season, it was a Wake Forest. It might have been the third week, actually. It was the first week of ACC. It was like a pretty crappy weekend in terms of weather, and it was not great in terms of just like the environment. But I shouldn't say that entirely. Like the actual fan environment at the game was phenomenal. But just seeing Chase Burns live for the first time this spring was so explosive and so loud. I just had a lot of fun watching him pitch. I didn't get to see the great Hagen Smith outing in Texas where he struck out like 17. I was there the week before. So that Chase Burns outing was probably the most exciting for me in person. But I always just love too the first weekend of like the NCAA tournament when there's tons of baseball on and you're kind of flipping around. You can turn on squeeze play and just see like the NFL red zone of college baseball. That's fun too. So one of those two for me. But I don't think it really lived up to the insane 2023 College World Series we had. We did have some fun walk-offs this year though, so I don't want to knock it too much, but probably one of those.
Our final series was absolutely fantastic. Quick follow-up for you. You're the GM. You taking JJ, Charlie, or Chase first overall?
Oh, not even a Travis Bazzana inclusion there. Wow.
Oh, okay. Let's throw him in there too.
Yeah, so those would be our top four right now. We have it ranked Condon 1, Bazzana 2, Weatherholt 3, Chase Burns 4. For me, it would either be Charlie Condon or JJ Weatherholt. So like the Weatherholt-Bazzana distinction for me is like I just prefer Weatherholt's swing. I think the shortstop defensive profile is an edge. I don't think there's a huge difference in terms of like contact quality, swing decision at the plate, raw power. Obviously, the hamstring injury is not ideal for JJ, and that for the Bazzana believers, like that is a key difference, which I understand. So if I had like a scouting crew who believed Weatherholt was the best pure hitter in the class, I might take him. But I also think it's really hard to pass up Charlie Condon and his just hit power combination. He just had one of maybe the best seasons in college baseball that we've ever seen. Even if you adjust for offensive environment, like I mentioned earlier, he has one of the best seasons since like Chris Bryant, when he went off at a really entirely different college environment when home runs were really hard to come by. So it would be one of those two. And picking one, I might just want to go Condon for the upside potential. Like, I think he's got a chance to be a plus hitter with 70 power. And then he's also showed an ability to play multiple defensive positions and play them well. Like, the athleticism piece for him this spring was much better than I expected it to be. So it's really tight between all these players at the top for me. But if you had asked me today, I'd probably take Condon, who is the number one player on our board. So I think that needs to carry a little bit of weight, at least for my choice here.
You think Drew Burris is going to go top five in a couple of years?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I've already had scouts tell me that Drew Burris is crazy overrated. I know you don't want to hear that, but I don't want to rain on the Drew Burris parade, but I am excited to like dive into him a little bit more, because he just had a pretty ridiculous season.
What a fun way to wrap up this episode. But a huge thank you to Carlos from Baseball America for joining us today and sharing your expert insights on the MLB draft and the future of the Braves minor league system. Carlos, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. Is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners before we sign off?
No, not really. Thank you for having me. I would just say, if you want to follow my work or just the work of my colleagues, baseballamerica.com, we are subscriber supported and really appreciate all those who do subscribe to BA and let us do what we do. And without you guys, I wouldn't be able to cover the draft with this amount of like depth and the amount of time I spend on it. So thank you guys, both you guys, for having me on the podcast, and anyone who checks out BA, really appreciate it.
Make sure to definitely check out and get the most out of this year's draft season by checking out Baseball America for all your baseball prospects needs. Their pre and post draft coverage is absolutely out of this world, and that subscription is worth every single penny. As always, a special thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We appreciate your support and hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and come back next week for more insights and updates on the Braves minor league system. Until then, keep cheering on the future stars of Atlanta, and we'll see you next time on Peach State Prospects.